Hello, this is Jo Tomalin from Fringe Review, and I'm here with Richard, who's doing a show called Leaf by Niggle at the Scottish Storytelling Centre at the Edinburgh Fringe. So, Richard, what's your full name?
Richard Medrington.
And could you tell us about your show, please?
Yeah, the show is a it's a J.R.R. Tolkien short story that he wrote in. Well, he wrote it just before the Second World War, but he didn't publish it until 1945, and it hasn't received very much attention. It's probably one of his least known stories, but he wrote it really during a time when he was working on Lord of the Rings, and he wasn't sure that he was going to finish it because he could see war was coming, and having experienced the First World War, he knew that. You know, this could be the end of him. So it's really a story about an artist painting a huge canvas of a tree in a forest and mountains, and he knows that he has a long journey to make, and he's worried that he isn't going to finish his painting. And that's kind of the setup. And it then goes off into very interesting territory. It's always been one of my favourite stories. I've wanted to perform it in some form since 1993 when I first read it, and I approached the Tolkien Trust at that point and asked for permission, and they were very nice about it, but they said they didn't really think puppetry was the right medium. So I didn't do it then, obviously, although I did it once as a storytelling piece. They gave me permission for that. But then I came back, I couldn't get it out of my mind, and finally, about 3 years ago, I went back to them again and asked if they might reconsider, and they did.
And so how did you adapt it? What did you have to do once you had the short story? And how did you decide how to use puppetry in it?
Well, I initially had many ideas. I worked with some other people on the original ideas. And at one point we were going to use a lot of puppets, quite a complicated set. Then we thought it was sort of a way of doing it without words, without using any words at all, just with music and sound effects. And eventually I decided not to use any puppets to tell the story verbatim, so I think I miss out two or three words in the whole thing, and to use a lot of objects from the family home, from the attic of the family home. So I found all these, for various reasons, we were sorting through the attic. Me and my sister, we came across extraordinary items that related to different members of the family. And some of them seemed to tie in so perfectly with the story that it became a different way of telling the story. So it's not exactly object animation. It's more storytelling with objects that just fit, hopefully.
Okay. And did you tell the story many, many times before it became part of you? Because I've heard of some storytellers say they have to tell a story 100 times before it sort of emanates forth. Did that become part of your development?
I have been through, as you can imagine, learning the story. I have been through it many, many times, walking in the Pentlands. I've just been going over it again and again. There are still things I'm seeing in it. I mean, I don't know how many times I've done the show now. We started last year, April last year, and we did a Fringe run last year. But I'm still seeing things like, oh my goodness, I didn't realise that about it. My wife mentioned something to me just yesterday, and she said, have you never noticed it? I said, no, I hadn't noticed that. And it's a crucial, crucial thing, just one word that says so much. And I thought, no, I hadn't seen it. But a previous show that we've been doing, the company has been doing for the last 11 years, we've now done 1,800 times. That's The Man Who Planted Trees. And doing that show, I'm still finding new depths in that story as well. So I think if you find the right story, a story that you really relate to for whatever reason, then if it's a great story, and I think both Man Who Planted Trees and Leaf by Niggle are great stories, I think you just go on and you never get to the end of them.
So do you think of yourself as a storyteller or a character when you perform this show?
A storyteller, I would say. Yeah, no, I mean, there are various characters, and I do kind of characterise them. But no, it's a storytelling piece. But the kind of there's acting involved as well. But it's a fine balance. And Andy Cannon, who's directed it, himself is a fantastic storyteller. He is trying to get me to balance out the storytelling with the becoming the characters, and not to go too far in either direction, but just to keep it bouncing back and forth between the two. I think that's important. I think the variety, you know, is very important, because it's quite a long show. It's 75 minutes long. So it's always, I think, the objects and the music, Karim Powell's music, and MJ McCarthy's soundtrack, and the various objects and the lighting effects and the changes in pace. It's all part of trying to keep your audience with you, you know. And it's not just about me. People talk about children have no attention span these days. I think it applies to adults just as much. I think it always has. And I think as performers, it's very important to keep people not exactly on their toes, but keep them with you. And they will inevitably drift off, and you have to keep bringing them back in. And I think the variety, the changes in the way you tell a story are very important in that sense.
Do you feel that the show evolves the more you tell it, with little changes or word changes or movement?
There are small changes. It's the first show I've done for a long time that is pretty much a set script, so I don't veer off from the script at all, whereas with Man Who Planted Trees, there was a lot of improvisation in that show. With this one, it's more, I just tell it pretty straight, but there are things. I mean, every show, you're trying to... every show will be different, just different emphasis and you know, thinking about the words and not kind of going into that state where you're just... a part of your brain is telling the story and the other part of you can be thinking about what shopping you need to do in the evening. You know, it's important to avoid that, although it sometimes just happens. But to really keep... thinking about what I'm saying and the implications of it, and when I am a character, then to really try and think about experiencing the thing that the character is experiencing, and how it would make the character feel. So yeah.
So how do audiences react, and do they react differently?
Yeah, again, it's quite different from The Man Who Planted Trees, which is a really funny show. I'm not the funny one in that show. Rick Conti is a very amusing puppeteer. But there you're getting instant feedback from the audience the whole way through. With this one, the response to the audience is, there are some moments of humour when the audience will laugh, but generally you're pretty much running on faith that they're still with you, because you can't see them in this venue anyway. You can't see them because of the lights. And so you may feel that they're with you, but you're hoping that they are. But then afterwards, we have a little guest book upstairs, and I'll sit up here, and we have books. HarperCollins produced a standalone version of the story for the first time ever to coincide with this show, and they've actually used our artwork on the cover and given us a credit on the back. So I'll be selling those books up here and other things, and people will write in the guest book, and the comments we've had, some people, it really is a hugely significant story for them for different reasons. And we've had, I mean, I've got now several books of comments from the last year and a bit, which are just extraordinary. Never had anything like it.
Given that it's a story by Tolkien, do you get a lot of Tolkien fans or people who've never really discovered his work?
We certainly get both. A lot of Tolkien fans, and also people who don't like Tolkien, because it's not a very Tolkien-like story, and that it doesn't have any elves or magicians or dragons or anything in it. In fact, there's no magic per se at all, although I think it's a very magical story. So you people who don't like Tolkien like it. But we did it last year in September for the Tolkien Society's annual get-together in Oxford, in one of the colleges in Oxford. And there were 270 avid Tolkien fans who came to see it. And it was a little bit daunting, because, you know, you don't know how they're going to react. But they loved it. They queued for an hour and a half afterwards to buy copies of the book and to sign the guest book and to talk about it. And it was just it was a real privilege and an experience.
the set is visually gorgeous with all your memorabilia, and you already mentioned that some of it comes from your own family. Did you have someone else help you design it to place things or add things? Because it truly is just lovely.
Yeah, Ailey Cohen initially was the designer, so she helped a lot in the early stages. And it's really a matter of just playing around with putting objects. And I've always liked, you know, as a family, we are hoarders. We have lots of old bits and pieces and stuff. And I've always liked that kind of thing. I think in another life, I would have liked to be a window dresser, actually. So I love kind of composing sort of collages of images, you know, and objects particularly. But yeah, Ailey Cohen and Annie Cannon were a great help with that.
So what is your background as a performer? Because it's obvious that you are an actor as well as a storyteller to me. How did you follow and discover the craft and get to storytelling?
I was sent to boarding school when I was quite young in England. And in the dormitories at night, we would tell stories, even though sometimes we were supposed to be silent. And if you got caught, you could actually get beaten for talking after lights out. But we did anyway. And I was always the best storyteller. So we'd read mainly ghost stories during the day and then retell them at night. And I just found that I really liked doing it. And people always asked me for a story. And I'd always liked, from an even younger child, I'd enjoyed acting and been in plays and written plays and things. But I mean, I don't see myself particularly as an actor or a puppeteer or a storyteller or a writer or whatever. I don't really know what I am. When people ask, I never quite know how to answer it. But for me, the story is always the most important thing. I don't want to be involved. And very fortunate that I haven't. I think if I was an actor per se and had to go for auditions to be in plays that I didn't particularly, you know, really love, I would have found that difficult. So I've been lucky in that I've been able to tell stories that I really care about.
Well, one of the things that you do is for an hour and a quarter to tell the story. You are a performer on stage. So do you do any kind of warm-up, physical or vocal, to prepare yourself to be creative or grounded or to relate to the audience?
I do a vocal warm-up before the show. So a sort of maybe a 10-15 minute vocal warm-up. I have a wonderful little app on my phone that, because I find it difficult to just do a vocal warm-up on my own, so this is a vocal warm-up that I can kind of sing along to, as it were. And I will do a little bit of sort of Tai Chi exercises before the show as well, just dealing with my energies or whatever. And I like to have a little bit of time to myself. So after before we set up, because obviously in the Fringe it's very rushed, you know. We're very lucky here at the Storytelling Centre that this is one of the most relaxed venues that I've ever heard of. And we have a lot of time to set up compared to some places. And so I will usually try and do the vocal warm-up and the, you know, relaxation before we set up, then get set, and then have a little bit of time afterwards to get changed and put in my contact lenses and not be kind of rushing to be on stage.
Yeah. So where is Puppet State Theatre, Puppet Company, taking Leaf by Niggle next?
Yeah, well, we're going on tour in the autumn, sort of from late September through till November, and we're going to be in Cumbria and the north of England, doing four or five performances, then in Wales, mostly in South Wales, and then in and around the south of England. And we have one more performance in Edinburgh before the end of the year.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us today and Fringe Review, Richard. Thank you, and best of luck for the run.
Thank you very much, Joe. Nice to talk to you.